And Doran burst out, "Why should you?" Namarti said, "What do you mean, why should I?" "You have a personal grudge against Selden. Once he is gone, why should you run unnecessary risks at the highest level? You will make your peace with Cleon, and I will have to retire to my crumbling estate and my impossible dreams. And perhaps, to play it safe, you will have me killed." Namarti said, "No. Cleon was born to the throne. He comes from several generations of emperors, the proud Entun dynasty. He would be very difficult to handle, a plague. You, on the other hand, would come to the throne as a member of a new dynasty, without any strong ties to tradition, for the previous Wyan emperors were, you will admit, totally undistinguished. You will be seated on a shaky throne, and will need someone to support you. Me. And I will need someone who is dependent upon me, and whom I can therefore handle. You. Come, Andoran, ours is not a marriage of love, which fades in a year. It is a marriage of convenience, which can last as long as we both live. Let us trust each other."
"You swear I will be emperor?"
"What good would swearing do if you couldn't trust my word? Let us say I would find you an extraordinarily useful emperor, and I would want you to replace Cleon as soon as that can safely be managed. Now, introduce me to this man you think will be the perfect tool for your purposes."
"Very well. And remember what makes him different. I have studied him. He's a not very bright idealist. He will do what he's told, unconcerned by danger, unconcerned by second thoughts. And he exudes a kind of trustworthiness, so that his victim will trust him, even if he has a blaster in his hand."
"I find that impossible to believe."
"Wait till you meet him," said Andoran.
Chapter 17. Raich kept his eyes down. He had taken a quick look at Namarti, and it was all he needed. He had met the man 10 years before, when Raich had been sent to lure Jojo Joranum to his destruction, and one look was more than enough. Namarti had changed little in 10 years. Anger and hatred were still the dominant characteristics one could see in him, or that Raich could see in him at any rate, for he realized he was not an impartial witness. And those seemed to have marinated him into leathery permanence. His face was a trifle more gaunt, his hair was flecked with gray, but his thin-lipped mouth was set in the same harsh line, and his dark eyes were as brilliantly dangerous as ever. That was enough, and Raich kept his eyes averted. Namarti, he felt, was not the type of person who would take to someone who could stare him straight in the face. Namarti seemed to devour Raich with his own eyes, but the slight sneer his face always seemed to wear remained. He turned to Andoran, who stood uneasily to one side, and said, quite as though the subject of conversation were not present, "This is the man, then." Andoran nodded, and his lips moved in a soundless, "Yes, chief." Namarti said to Raich abruptly, "Your name?"
"Planchette, sir."
"You believe in our cause?"
"Yes, sir."
He spoke carefully, in accordance with Andoran's instructions. "I am a Democrat, and want greater participation of the people in the governmental process." Namarti's eyes flicked in Andoran's direction. "A speechmaker." He looked back at Raich. "Are you willing to undertake risks for the cause?"
"Any risk, sir."
"You will do as you are told. No questions, no hanging back."
"I will follow orders."
"Do you know anything about gardening?" Raich hesitated.
No, sir.
You're a Trantorian, then, born under the dome?
I was born in Millimaru, sir, and I was brought up in Dol.
Very well, said Namarti. Then to Andorin, take him out and deliver him temporarily to the men waiting there. They will take good care of him. Then come back, Andorin. I want to speak to you.
When Andorin returned, a profound change had come over Namarti. His eyes were glittering, and his mouth was twisted into a feral grin.
Andorin, he said, the gods we spoke of the other day are with us to an extent I couldn't have imagined.
I told you the man was suitable for our purposes.
Far more suitable than you think. You know, of course, the tale of how Harry Seldon, our revered First Minister, sent his son, or foster son, rather, to see Joranum, and to set the trap into which Joranum, against my advice, fell.
Yes, said Andorin, nodding wearily. I know the story.
He said it with the air of one who knew the story entirely too well.
I saw that boy only that once, but his image burned into my brain. Do you suppose that 10 years' passage and false heels and a shaved mustache could fool me? That planchette of yours is Raich, the foster son of Harry Seldon.
Andorin paled and held his breath for a moment. He said,
Are you sure of that, Chief?
As sure as I am that you're standing here in front of me, and that you have introduced an enemy into our midst.
I had no idea.
Don't get nervous, said Namarti. I consider it the best thing you have ever done in your idle aristocratic life. You have played the role that the gods have marked out for you. If I had not known who he was, he might have fulfilled the function for which he was undoubtedly intended, to be a spy in our midst, and an informant of our most secret plans. But since I know who he is, it won't work that way. Instead, we now have everything.
Namarti rubbed his hands together in delight, and haltingly, as if he realized how far out of character it was for him, he smiled and laughed.
Chapter 18. Manella said thoughtfully, I guess I won't be seeing you any more, Planchette.
Raich was drying himself after his shower.
Why not?
Gleb Andorin doesn't want me to.
Why not?
Manella shrugged her smooth shoulders. He says you have important work to do, and no more time to fool around. Maybe he means you'll get a better job. Raich stiffened.
What kind of work? Did he mention anything in particular?
No, but he said he would be going to the Imperial Sector.
Did he? Does he often tell you things like that?
You know how it is, Planchette. When a fellow's in bed with you, he talks a lot.
I know, said Raich, who was always careful not to. What else does he say?
Why do you ask?
She frowned a bit.
He always asks about you, too. I noticed that about men. They're curious about each other. Why is that, do you suppose?
What do you tell him about me?
Not much. Just that you're a very decent sort of guy. Naturally, I don't tell him that I like you better than I like him. That would hurt his feelings. And it might hurt me, too.
Raich was getting dressed.
So, it's goodbye, then.
For a while, I suppose. Gleb may change his mind. Of course, I'd like to go to the Imperial Sector, if he'd take me,
I've never been there.
Rach almost slipped, but he managed to cough, then said, I've never been there either.
It's got the biggest buildings and the nicest places and the fanciest restaurants. And that's where the rich people live.
I'd like to meet some rich people. Besides Gleb, I mean.
Rach said, I suppose there's not much you can get out of a person like me.
You're all right. You can't think of credits all the time. But you've got to think of them some of the time, especially since I think Gleb is getting tired of me.
Rach felt compelled to say, No one could get tired of you.
And then found, a little to his own confusion, that he meant it.
Manella said,
That's what men always say, but you'd be surprised. Anyway, it's been good, you and I, Planchette. Take care of yourself. And who knows, we may see each other again.
Rach nodded and found himself at a loss for words. There was no way in which he could say or do anything to express his feelings. He turned his mind in other directions. He had to find out what the Namarti people were planning. If they were separating him from Manella, the crisis must be rapidly approaching. All he had to go on was that odd question about gardening. Nor could he get any further information back to Selden. He had been kept under close scrutiny since his meeting with Namarti, and all avenues of communication were cut off. Surely another indication of an approaching crisis. But if he were to find out what was going on only after it was done, and if he could communicate the news only after it was no longer news, he would have failed.
Chapter 19. Harry Selden was not having a good day. He had not heard from Rach since his first communique. He had no idea what was happening. Aside from his natural concern for Rach's safety, surely he would hear if something really bad had happened, there was his uneasiness over what might be planned. It would have to be subtle. A direct attack on the palace itself was totally out of the question. Security there was far too tight. But if so, what else could be planned that would be sufficiently effective? The whole thing was keeping him awake at night and distracted by day. The signal light flashed.
First Minister, your 2 o'clock appointment, sir.
What 2 o'clock appointment is this?
Mandel Gruber, the gardener. He has the necessary certification.
Selden remembered.
Yes. Send him in.
This was no time to see Gruber, but he had agreed to it in a moment of weakness. The man had seemed distraught. A First Minister should not have such moments of weakness, but Selden had been Selden long before he had become First Minister.
Come in, Gruber, he said kindly.
Gruber stood before him, head ducking mechanically, eyes darting this way and that. Selden was quite certain the gardener had never been in any room as magnificent as this one, and he had the bitter urge to say, Do you like it? Please take it. I don't want it. But he only said, What is it, Gruber? Why are you so unhappy? There was no immediate answer. Gruber merely smiled vacantly. Selden said, Sit down, man. Right there in that chair.
Oh, no, First Minister. It would not be fitting. I'll get it dirty.
If you do, it will be easy to clean. Do as I say.
Good.
Now, just sit there a minute or two and gather your thoughts. Then, when you are ready, tell me what's the matter. Gruber sat silent for a moment, Then the words came out in a panting rush. First Minister, it is Chief Gardener I am to be. The Blessed Emperor himself told me so.
Yes, I have heard of that. But that surely isn't what is troubling you. Your new post is a matter of congratulations, and I do congratulate you. I may even have contributed to it, Gruber. I have never forgotten your bravery at the time I was nearly killed, and you can be sure I mentioned it to His Imperial Majesty. It is a suitable reward, Gruber, and you would deserve the promotion in any case, for it is quite clear from your record that you are fully qualified for the post. So now that that's out of the way, tell me what is troubling you.
First Minister, it is the very post and promotion that's troubling me. It is something I cannot manage, for I am not qualified.
We are convinced you are.
Gruber grew agitated. And is it in an office I will have to sit? I can't sit in an office. I could not go out in the open air and work with the plants and animals. I would be in prison, First Minister.
Selden's eyes opened wide. No such thing, Gruber. You needn't stay in the office longer than you have to. You could wander around the grounds freely, supervising everything. You will have all the outdoors you want, and you will merely spare yourself the hard work.
I want the hard work, First Minister, and it's no chance at all they will let me come out of the office. I have watched the present Chief Gardener. He couldn't leave his office, though he wanted to, ever so. There is too much administration, too much bookkeeping. Sure, if he wants to know what is going on, we must go to his office to tell him. He watches things on holovision, he said with infinite contempt. As though you can tell anything about growing, living things from pictures. It is not for me, First Minister.
Come, Gruber, be a man. It's not all that bad. You'll get used to it. You'll work your way in slowly.
Gruber shook his head. First off, at the very first, I will have to deal with all the new gardeners. I'll be buried. Then, with sudden energy, it is a job I do not want and must not have, First Minister.
Right now, Gruber, perhaps you don't want the job, but you're not alone. I'll tell you that right now I wish I were not First Minister. This job is too much for me. I even have a notion that there are times when the Emperor himself is tired of his imperial robes. We're all in this galaxy to do our work, and the work isn't always pleasant.
I understand that, First Minister, but the Emperor must be Emperor, for he was born to that. And you must be First Minister, for there is no one else who can do the job. But in my case, it is just Chief Gardener we are ruminating upon. There are 50 gardeners in the place who could do it as well as I could and who wouldn't mind the office. You say that you spoke to the Emperor about how I tried to help you. Can't you speak to him again and explain that if he wants to reward me for what I did, he can leave me as I am?
Selden leaned back in his chair and said solemnly, Gruber, I would do that for you if I could. But I must explain something to you, and I can only hope that you will understand it. The Emperor, in theory, is absolute ruler of the Empire. In actual fact, there is very little he can do. I run the Empire right now much more than he does, and there is very little I can do, too. There are millions and billions of people at all levels of government, all making decisions, all making mistakes. Some acting wisely and heroically, some acting foolishly and thievishly. There's no controlling them. Do you understand me, Gruber?
I do, but what has this to do with my case? Because there is only one place where the emperor is really absolute ruler, and that is over the imperial grounds. Here, his word is law, and the layers of officials beneath him are few enough for him to handle. For him to be asked to rescind a decision he has made in connection with the imperial palace grounds would be to invade the only area that he would consider inviolate. If I were to say, "Take back your decision on Gruber, Your Imperial Majesty," he would be much more likely to relieve me of my duties than to take back his decision. That might be a good thing for me, but it wouldn't help you any. Gruber said, "Does that mean there's no way things can be changed?" "That's exactly what it means. But don't worry, Gruber, I'll help you all I can. I'm sorry, but now I have really spent all the time with you that I am able to spare." Gruber rose to his feet. In his hands he twisted his green gardening cap. There was more than a suspicion of tears in his eyes. "Thank you, First Minister. I know you would like to help. You're a good man, First Minister." He turned and left, sorrowing. Selden looked after him thoughtfully and shook his head. Multiply Gruber's woes by a quadrillion, and you would have the woes of all the people of the 25 million worlds of the Empire. And how was he, Selden, to work out salvation for all of them, when he was helpless to solve the problem of one single man who had come to him for help? Psychohistory could not save one man. Could it save a quadrillion? He shook his head again, checked the nature and time of his next appointment, and then suddenly stiffened. He shouted into his communications wire in sudden wild abandon, quite unlike his usually strict control, "Get that gardener back. Get him back here right now." Chapter 20. "What's this about new gardeners?" exclaimed Selden. This time he did not ask Gruber to sit down. Gruber's eyes blinked rapidly. He was in a panic at having been recalled so unexpectedly.
New gardeners?
He stammered.
"You said, 'all the new gardeners.' Those were your words. What new gardeners?"
Gruber was astonished.
"Sure. If there is a new chief gardener, there will be new gardeners. It is the custom."
"I have never heard of this." "The last time we had a change of chief gardeners, you were not First Minister. It is likely you were not even on Trantor."
"But what's it all about?"
"Well, gardeners are never discharged. Some die, some grow too old and are pensioned off and replaced. Still, by the time a new chief gardener is ready for his duties, at least half the staff is aged and beyond their best years. They are all pensioned off generously, and new gardeners are brought in."
"For youth?"
"Partly, and partly because by that time there are usually new plans for the gardens, and it is new ideas and new schemes we must have. There are almost 500 square kilometers in the gardens and parklands, and it usually takes some years to reorganize it. And it is myself who will have to supervise it all."
"Please, First Minister," Gruber was gasping, "surely a clever man like your own self can find a way to change the blessed Emperor's mind."
Selden paid no attention. His forehead was creased in concentration.
"Where do the new gardeners come from?"
"There are examinations on all the worlds. There are always people waiting to serve as replacements. They'll be coming in by the hundreds in a dozen batches. It will take me a year at the least."
"From where do they come? From where?"
"From any of a million worlds.
We want a variety of horticultural knowledge. Any citizen of the Empire can qualify. From Trantor too?
No, not from Trantor. There is no one from Trantor in the gardens.
His voice grew contemptuous.
You can't get a gardener out of Trantor. The parks they have here under the dome aren't gardens. They are potted plants, and the animals are in cages. Trantorians, poor specimens that they are, know nothing about open air, free water, and the true balance of nature.
All right, Gruber. I will now give you a job. It will be up to you to get me the names of every new gardener scheduled to arrive over the coming weeks. Everything about them. Name, world, reference number, education, experience, everything. I want it all here on my desk just as quickly as possible. I'm going to send people to help you, people with machines. What kind of a computer do you use?
Only a simple one for keeping track of plantings and species and things like that.
All right. The people I send will be able to do anything you can't do. I can't tell you how important this is.
If I should do this...
Gruber, this is not the time to make bargains. Fail me, and you will not be chief gardener. Instead, you will be discharged without a pension.
Alone again, Selden barked into his communication wire, "Cancel all appointments for the rest of the afternoon." He then let his body flop in his chair, feeling every bit of his 50 years, and feeling his headache worsen. For years, for decades, security had been built up around the Imperial Palace grounds. Thicker, more solid, more impenetrable, as each new layer and each new device was added. And every once in a while, hordes of strangers were let into the grounds. No questions asked, probably, but one. Can you garden? The stupidity involved was too colossal to grasp, and he had barely caught it in time. Or had he? Was he even now too late?
Chapter 21. Gleb and Doran gazed at Namarty through half-closed eyes. He never liked the man, but there were times when he liked him less than he usually did, and this was one of those times. Why should Andoran, a Wyan of royal birth, that's what it amounted to after all, have to work with this parvenu, this near-psychotic paranoid? Andoran knew why, and he had to endure. Even when Namarty was once again in the process of telling the story of how he had built up the movement during a period of 10 years to its present pitch of perfection. Did he tell this to everyone, over and over? Or was it just Andoran who was his chosen vessel? Namarty's face seemed to shine with malignant glee as he said in an odd sing-song, as though it were a matter of rote, "Year after year, I worked on those lines, even through hopelessness and uselessness, building an organization, chipping away at confidence in the government, creating and intensifying dissatisfaction. When there was the banking crisis and the week of the moratorium, I..." He paused suddenly. "I've told you this many times, and you're sick of hearing it, aren't you?"
Andoran's lips twitched in a brief, dry smile. Namarty was not such an idiot as not to know what a bore he was. He just couldn't help it. Andoran said, "You've told me this many times." He allowed the remainder of the question to hang in the air unanswered. The answer, after all, was an obvious affirmative. There was no need to face him with it. A slight flush crossed Namarty's sallow face. He said, "But it could have gone on forever. The building, the chipping, without ever coming to a point,
if I hadn't had the proper tool in my hands. And without any effort on my part, the tool came to me.
The gods brought you Planchette, said Andorra neutrally.
You're right. There will be a group of gardeners entering the Imperial Palace grounds soon.
He paused and seemed to savor the thought.
Men and women, enough to serve as a mask for the handful of our operatives who will accompany them. Among them will be you and Planchette. And what will make you and Planchette unusual is that you will be carrying blasters.
Surely, said Andoran with deliberate malice behind a polite expression, we'll be stopped at the gates and held for questioning. Bringing an illicit blaster onto the palace grounds...
You won't be stopped, said Namarti, missing the malice. You won't be searched. That's been arranged. You will all be greeted as a matter of course by some palace official. I don't know who would ordinarily be in charge of that task. The third assistant chamberlain in charge of grass and leaves, for all I know. But in this case, it will be Selden himself.
The great mathematician will hurry out to greet the new gardeners and welcome them to the grounds.
You're sure of that, I suppose?
Of course I am. It's all been arranged. He will learn, at more or less the last minute, that his foster son is among those listed as new gardeners, and it will be impossible for him to refrain from coming out to see him. And when Selden appears, Planchette will raise his blaster. Our people will raise the cry of treason. In the confusion and hurly-burly, Planchette will kill Selden, and then you will kill Planchette. You will then drop your blaster and leave. There are those who will help you leave. It's been arranged.
Is it absolutely necessary to kill Planchette?
Namarti frowned.
Why? Do you object to one killing and not to another? When Planchette recovers, do you wish him to tell the authorities all he knows about us? Besides, this is a family feud we are arranging. Don't forget that Planchette is, in actual fact, Rache Selden. It will look as though the two had fired simultaneously, or as though Selden had given orders that if his son made any hostile move, he was to be shot down. We will see to it that the family angle will be given full publicity. It'll be reminiscent of the bad old days of the bloody Emperor Manuel. The people of Trantor will surely be repelled by the sheer wickedness of the deed. That, piled on top of all the inefficiencies and breakdowns they've been witnessing and living through, will raise the cry for a new government, and no one will be able to refuse them, least of all the Emperor. And then we'll step in.
Just like that?
No, not just like that. I don't live in a dream world. There is likely to be some interim government, but it will fail. We'll see to it that it fails. And we'll come out in the open and revive the old Joranumite arguments that the Trantorians have never forgotten. And in time, in not too much time, I will be First Minister.
And I
will eventually be the Emperor.
Andoran said, The chance of all this working is small. This is arranged, that is arranged, the other thing is arranged. All of it has to come together and mesh perfectly, or it will fail. Somewhere, someone is bound to mess up. It's an unacceptable risk.
Unacceptable? For whom? For you?
Certainly. You expect me to make certain that Planchette will kill his father, and you expect me to then kill Planchette. Why me?
Aren't their tools worth less than I, who might more easily be risked?
Yes, but to choose anyone else would make failure certain. Who but you has so much riding on this mission that there is no chance you will turn back in a fit of vapors at the last minute?
The risk is enormous.
Isn't it worth it to you? You're playing for the imperial throne.
And what risk are you taking, Chief? You will remain here quite comfortable and wait to hear the news.
Namarti's lip curled.
What a fool you are, Andoran. What an emperor you will make. Do you suppose I take no risk because I will be here? If the gambit fails, if the plot miscarries, if some of our people are taken, do you think they won't tell everything they know? If you were somehow caught, would you face the tender treatment of the Imperial Guard without ever telling them about me? And with a failed assassination attempt at hand, do you suppose they won't comb Trantor to find me? Do you suppose that in the end they will fail to find me? And when they do find me, what do you suppose I will have to face at their hands? Risk? I run a worse risk than any of you, just sitting here doing nothing. It boils down to this, Andoran. Do you or do you not wish to be emperor?
Andoran said in a low voice, I wish to be emperor.
And so things were set in motion.
Chapter 22.
Reach had no trouble seeing that he was being treated with special care. The whole group of would-be gardeners was now quartered in one of the hotels in the Imperial Sector, although not one of the prime hotels, of course. The gardeners were an odd lot, from 50 different worlds. But Reach had little chance to speak to any of them. Andoran, without being too obvious about it, had managed to keep him apart from the others. Reach wondered why. It depressed him. In fact, he had been feeling somewhat depressed since he had left Y. It interfered with his thinking process, and he fought it, but not with entire success. Andoran was himself wearing rough clothes and was attempting to look like a workman. He would be playing the part of a gardener as a way of running the show, whatever the show might be. Reach felt ashamed that he had not been able to penetrate the nature of that show. They had closed in on him and prevented all communication, so he hadn't even had the chance to warn his father. They might be doing this for every Trantorian who had been pushed into the group, for all he knew, just as an extreme precaution. Reach estimated that there might be a dozen Trantorians among them. All of them Namarti's people, of course, men and women both. What puzzled him was that Andoran treated him with what was almost affection. He monopolized him, insisted on having all his meals with him, treated him quite differently from the way in which he treated anyone else. Could it be because they had shared Manella? Reach did not know enough about the mores of the Y Sector to be able to tell whether there might not be a polyandrous touch to their society. If two men shared a woman, did that make them in a way fraternal? Did it create a bond? Reach had never heard of such a thing, but he knew better than to suppose he had a grasp of even a tiny fraction of the infinite subtleties of galactic societies, even of Trantorian societies. But now that his mind had brought him back to Manella, he dwelled on her for a while. He missed her terribly, and it occurred to him that missing her might be the cause of his depression. Though, to tell the truth, what he was feeling now, as he was finishing lunch with Andoran, was almost despair, though he could think of no cause for it. Manella. She had said she wanted to visit the Imperial Sector, and presumably she could wheedle Andorin to her liking. He was desperate enough to ask a foolish question.
Mr. Andorin, I keep wondering if maybe you brought Miss Dubanka along with you, here to the Imperial Sector.
Andorin looked utterly astonished. Then he laughed gently. Manella, do you see her doing any gardening, or even pretending she could? No, no, Manella is one of those women invented for our quiet moments. She has no function at all otherwise. Then, why do you ask, Planchette? Rach shrugged.
I don't know. It's sort of dull around here. I sort of thought...
His voice trailed away. Andorin watched him carefully. Finally he said, Surely you're not of the opinion that it matters much which woman you are involved with. I assure you, it doesn't matter to her which man she's involved with. Once this is over, there will be other women. Plenty of them.
When will this be over?
Soon. And you're going to be part of it in a very important way. Andorin watched Rach narrowly. Rach said,
How important? Aren't I gonna be just a gardener?
His voice sounded hollow, and he found himself unable to put a spark in it. You'll be more than that, Planchette. You'll be going in with a blaster.
With a what?
A blaster.
I never held a blaster, not in my whole life.
There's nothing to it. You lift it, you point it, you close the contact, and someone dies.
I can't kill anyone.
I thought you were one of us, that you would do anything for the cause.
I didn't mean kill.
Rach couldn't seem to collect his thoughts. Why must he kill? What did they really have in mind for him? And how would he be able to alert the Imperial Guard before the killing would be carried out? Andorin's face hardened suddenly, an instant conversion from friendly interest to stern decision. He said, You must kill. Rach gathered all his strength.
No, I ain't gonna kill nobody. That's final.
Andorin said, Planchette, you will do as you are told.
Not murder.
Even murder.
How you gonna make me?
I shall simply tell you to. Rach felt dizzy. What made Andorin so confident? He shook his head.
No.
Andorin said, We've been feeding you, Planchette, ever since you left Y. I made sure you ate with me. I supervised your diet, especially the meal you just ate. Rach felt the horror rise within him. He suddenly understood.
Desperance.